You're listening to Neurodiversity at Work.
My homie told me that when people rise up against you, what's the sign of your destiny real? Fake ones been hating cause they know that one day you're making it. Jealousy's all they can feel. Plug in the phone, drift in my zone. Pain in the future and thinking alone. About when I'm grown, already blown. How'd I get blessed with this beautiful home? You were the sight, beautiful life. Beautiful sex, my husband and wife. Beautiful children, people who wanna come kill me because I'm expressing my rights. Kill me because I'm expressing my rights. Kill me because I'm expressing my rights.
Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Nemo from Sigma Polaris. Nemo was introduced to me by Scott Johnson from Reddington, and I'm really pleased he did, because Nemo is a super intelligent guy, a mathematician, a tech ambassador, an entrepreneur, and just a really genuine, good person. And he's doing really incredible things, not only with his technology, but actually in terms of how he's trying to support those who think differently, those who are neurodiverse, into work. So it's a real pleasure today to be joined by Nemo. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Hi, Nemo. Thanks so much for joining the podcast. Really pleased to have you on. We've been talking over the past few weeks and months, and I'm really fascinated and interested in your journey, your background, and what you're now currently doing. And I'm really excited and looking forward to sharing that with our audience. So why don't you tell them who you are, what you do, and what you're about, Nemo?
Certainly, Theo, and thank you very much for having me. So I'm the founder of Sigma Polaris, and it was through my work with them that I got the pleasure of making your acquaintance. Where at Sigma Polaris, we're using academic research and data-driven methods, more popularly often called AI, to do talent assessment and management. So trying to automate archaic HR processes and remove human, both explicit and implicit bias in those processes. And the reason I got into this, which branches well into your question of sort of who I am and all of these things, was, how I got the skills very briefly was sort of through an academic career, going from mathematics into behavioral economics, touching upon, doing an entire degree in logic and culminating a PhD in rationality theory. And I found all of these assessments very interesting. But one thing I'd always known was that in the industry, these are not necessarily, the objective measures of people. They're meritocratic position and relevance for a job, not necessarily the most important features. And the first time I found out this was actually before my academic career, because my first proper job was working for the government. I was working as what you call a goodwill ambassador. Basically, I presented science facts internationally. Now, the only reason I got this job initially was because I lost my CV. I was about 5 years younger and 2 degrees more junior than any of my colleagues, but they lost my CV. And because of that, they called me to interview. Now, when they called me to interview, they found out something, which was I knew everything about the technology that needed to be presented. And that's why I ended up getting the job. But they would never even have considered me had they looked at my CV, because on my CV, there was nothing. There was a previous flautist career and, you know, some decent enough A-levels, but who cares about that for that level of job? And I was shocked later down the line when one of my friends who was working in recruitment told me about how biased and nonsensical almost, I think you'll agree with that word, some of these processes were, where the importance put on certain universities, the importance on a first, rather than the importance on what the thesis was actually about, etc. And also having lived with a chap who had Asperger's, who was a fantastic individual, who got completely misunderstood in many situations because of his neurodiversity. And that sort of led to two things. One of them was, well, if the ways that are being used at the moment are archaic and not relying on some of the great academic literature in people assessments that exist, And if they fall prey to both explicit and implicit, which is no one's fault, bias, well, in that case, why don't we try to solve that problem? And that is what I started sort of setting out doing 3 years ago, and finally had a functional and tested and calibrated product in the beginning of this year and set out on this journey.
So how did you go about developing that technology? How long did it take you? And where are you currently at in that journey?
Well, the length of development on how, I guess, one of the things was both me and various academic colleagues and contacts scanning the literature, in the sense there are some fantastic questions. Say one of the things we look at, not one of the more interesting things, but it's people's attitude towards risk. Say, boringly again, some sales jobs, if there is loads of potential clients, you might want someone to have very risk-taking because there is a massive amount of outreach potential. But if there only are five clients, you might want someone who's risk-averse. Now, people's attitude towards risk is something that has been tested extensively in the academic literature, in, say, both behavioral economics, obviously, but interestingly enough, also in ethics. One question I love, which we have an equivalent version within our assessment, is imagine that in front of you are 600 people. Unfortunately, it's very sad. They have been poisoned. But you have an antidote. This is good news. But you don't have enough. Now, you have enough for 200 people. You have two options. You could either give it to 200 people, and you would definitely save those 200 people. Or you could dilute the antidote and give it to everyone. But if you do that, there's only a third chance that it will work. That means a third chance you will save everyone, but two-thirds chance that all of them will perish. In this case, what do you choose? Now, there is no right or wrong answer to this question. And I'm sure that the audience at the moment have an answer they prefer in their mind. Some people strongly prefer save 200 for sure. Some people strongly prefer to take the risk. Now, the expected and average outcome is going to be the same, save 200. And the answer reveals something true about the person, their attitude towards risk. Now, the way we have designed all of this, both looking at hard and soft skills, is to choose multiple questions within each category, say risk-taking, say problem-solving, verbal reasoning, preference towards ideation or implementation. Take multiple different scenarios and ask people what they prefer or what they think the right thing is, or in, say, arithmetic reasoning, calculate a number. And based on their answers, then learn something about them. So we don't ask, are you an ideator or an implementer? We put people in situations. And this tells you something true about people and also makes it reveal something they may not even have known themselves. Because without vast experience, how would you know if you're an ideator or an implementer or where on the scale you lie? So that was how that got built, sort of the questions, how they got selected, simply by looking at existing academic literature in multiple fields. Now, how to then take that into both a profile and then the next step, which is into a relevant shortlist of suitability of candidates, that is something that relied on multiple things, including accuracy analysis, which is trying to look at the most relevant features for a particular position, and then correspondingly weigh the importance of certain questions. But I think that is a more technical element that we might not want to go into at the moment.
I find that interesting because, you know, when you put yourself in that position of where you've got to make those types of critical decisions, you know, you're talking around life and death, for example. You're putting somebody, you're getting them to decide whether or not to save 50% of people or to try and save everybody, but you may not save anybody. I guess that really does bring out some insight into how somebody works and you know, those real life situations, because I've been through it and I answered that question, so I know how I answered it. I think is really powerful. So what I find interesting, Nemo, is and the reason why we started to talk is because of some of the work that you've been doing around neurodiversity, and specifically around you know, working with organizations in this space, charities. Just tell me a little bit about what neurodiversity means to you and how you've been, supporting neurodiversity as a concept, as an idea, as an umbrella term, and individuals within this space.
That's a very good question, Theo. So I think I'll start with what neurodiversity means for me and then move on to what influence and impact we are having on it. So for me, neurodiversity means, well, I am an academic, do forgive me, but sort of a different way of processing things, where it's different from diversity of thought, as we've been speaking about in our previous conversation, where I think diversity of thought has more to do with open-mindedness, where neurodiversity has to do with the different way that information is processed and treated for an individual. Say, I think that's really what it sort of boils down to. So neurodiversity talks about the different approaches and ways you perceive the world. And like that could be everything from, say, we're working, I'm now branching into that a little bit prematurely maybe, but with people on the autism spectrum, indirectly, in that we've recently decided to do an SCSR giveaway to various companies, which includes the Next Steps Foundation, which is a company that works placing people on the autism spectrum within work. Now, the reason that we have given it to them is because many of their charges are fantastic. But there's two things that are quite different about them. One of them is many of their CVs are non-standard because they've gone through a very different development because of their neuro condition. And many of them also comes across differently in a lot of interview situations. It can be difficult for HR managers who are not professionally, like they have training understanding neurodiversity, but they are not, you know, experts. They can come across in a way that's difficult to assess for the HR professionals. Therefore, by having all of their people, all of the people on the spectrum profiled and get an objective measure saying, okay, this person here is in the top 1% of verbal reasoning. Okay. When they speak, things may sound a little differently because they process things differently, but they understand perfectly what is being said. Being able to look at a person and say, this is an ideator. Like, look at the piece of paper. It's strongly on this continuous scale between ideation and implementation. This person prefers the thinking of ideas, the development of the concept. That's where this person lies. Now, having a paper in the beginning that can both delve into those conversation at interview stage, but also motivate before interview the relevance of this candidate for a vacancy, is something which really helps the Next Steps Foundation, their own statements, in motivating the relevance of their candidates for the particular vacancies, and therefore helping their charges into positions. So I guess one of the things that we have been very cautious and very careful about is developing the assessment that we're having in the entire tool in such a way that cultural diversity and neurodiversity should not impact what you are taught, like what the outcome of the profile is, where the verbal reasoning questions do not rely on a cultural understanding. They do not rely on a particular processing capability or sort of not capability, method to try and remove the possibility of neuro, cultural, gender, sex, age, discrimination, etc., from the original profiling step. And by doing that, and then by giving away the software to companies like the Next Steps Foundation for free, we give them a tool to give an objective measure that doesn't have the CV bias, that doesn't have the human implicit and explicit bias, so as they can accurately and fairly portray their candidates.
Interesting. So as you're describing that, Nemo, I'm thinking of how we present ourselves as people who are neurodiverse. And a lot of the conversations I have with people who are neurodifferent, neurodiverse, do associate with superpowers. And we see that in the media currently. And what you've described there, I think, is being able to support the individual show their superpowers, whatever that may be. And it's how we don't have to define it that way, but the areas where perhaps they excel in a very particular linear area, potentially, where they may struggle in a variety of other areas. So if you only put them in an interview process with a CV, they're going to fail because people are always going to miss out on this superhuman element that they have, right?
No, certainly. I think that's a very good analogy, actually, with these superpowers, where you could say, say my partner in life is dyslexic, and she actually she has a feature I also have, but a lot more than me, which is say if you look at reading speed, may fall in a very low bracket. Like personally, I fall in the bottom 5%. But if you look at comprehension, or if you look at the memory of facts, say both my partner and I lay in the very top percentage, where sometimes for some types of assessment might be, well, accurately would find out that if it's a question of speed reading, say you should not hire me. However, if it's a question of comprehending the material and it's not a question of can you do it in 5 minutes, I would be a good candidate. Similar here, because we look at the different variables independently for the profiling, you can find, like, we've had some people that scored in the top 1% of verbal reasoning and in the bottom 10% of arithmetic reasoning. And that's fine, because if a job they are applying for doesn't require mathematical reasoning, if it requires a comprehension of text, they might be an entire, like, nearly perfect candidate. And being able to look into the superpowers and get that objective measure, that's also one of the things where you say people on the spectrum can really benefit from, like on the autism spectrum, because they often have that superpower. And we can help them give an objective measure for it to show that superpower to prospective employers.
Wow. So this is fascinating, because, I don't know, 86% of people who are autistic are not in full-time work in the UK. And those statistics, global statistics, same in the US and in other countries as well. What you're saying there, I think, is spot on. And I think this comes back to them losing your CV and you getting the opportunity to sit in front of them and then them realizing, oh, actually, we've got somebody incredible here. I think there needs to be a real shift. For too long, and I don't want to pin it on any particular function, whether it's HR, recruitment, hiring managers, but the reality is we've been hiring vanilla, okay? We've been hiring the lovely flavor of vanilla. Most people like it. You know, it's not going to be turned down by most people. It's not going to offend people. It's, you know, it's the ice cream that's acceptable by most. And that's it. We've been hiring people into roles because they cover enough of what we need, and that's what we may be looking for, perhaps. But here we have an opportunity to go, right, what is it that this person is brilliant at? Let's facilitate and support that person, allow that person to just do what they're amazing at. Okay, there's some other bits and pieces that we need to do, right? But just let's build them the platform to be brilliant. Rather than having all these people that can do a variety of different things, let's facilitate and support them to be their best selves. And I think this is where the opportunity for technology and where clever people like you, Nemo, can provide a brilliant solution that can support hiring managers, HR managers, recruiters, taking some of that bias out. Because people want to do the right thing, yeah? I see it all the time. People want to do the right thing, but they just don't know how to.
No, that's exactly right. And I think that's such a good insight, Theo, and it's something that resonates really strongly with me, where, say, within my organization, I would rather hire someone who is brilliant when working under no stress and struggling working under stress, and then know that if we're coming up to a deadline, then I'm not going to put the time-sensitive things on this person's desk. Because I think nowadays we have found out that it's better to have people with superpowers use their superpowers and then like rather than having people without superpowers do all the different tasks. Where, say, one of the functions that we are rolling out and developing currently is using our assessment tool to form teams. Basically, within organizations, especially big organizations, you often see that if you have a new project that needs to be started and you start taking people from different departments to try and form this team to solve this problem, that's also done very, like, it's basically an indirect networking thing. It's who do you know? It's sort of selecting, that person in that department, this person in that department, whoever is in charge of doing that initial constellation uses very qualitative measures as the only thing they have as an option. Where one of the things we also want to do and what we're building now is the ability to then try to find the superpowers in the different teams, find those hidden gems that may not be met at a coffee machine or maybe met at a coffee machine, but you don't know their superpowers. Get the objective profiles automatically present a series of possible team constellations and then look at who the people are. So rather than be like, who do I know that might suit this project? Look at, these people have the skills for this project. Then look at, do I think this constellation works? Because it's not HR managers, team professional hiring managers, it's not their fault. There isn't anything of many things on the market that allows them these objective measures to find superpowers, to remove the bias, to also quickly form these constellations. And without those tools available, we need to do what humans do well normally, which is rely on our ability to form correlations. But as we know very well, you and I personally, Theo, when that happens, unfortunately, sometimes there are misunderstandings and interpretations. And that's where people on any neurodiverse, cultural diverse, etc. spectrum has tendencies of falling out. And that's what we want to combat, because we know it from all of from McKinsey's famous report, etc. When we have heterogenic work environments, things work better. When we have diversity of thought, things work better. And the mission that you are on with your work and the mission we are on with our work is to try to allow and provide tools and knowledge so that large and medium-sized organizations and even small organizations can reach that level of diversity. Not because diversity is a good thing, also because of that, but because it works. It makes things better. And if it's in the process of that, makes the world a better place, I'm just going to say yes, thank you.
Absolutely. So Nemo, I mean, that's all really good, insightful information. And, I really like what you're doing. What do you see in the future? What's next for you?
Like, I think the shift that we're going to see, which we're starting to see a little bit already, which is a very, very positive change, is that we're moving, my hope for the future and also what I trust is happening is we're moving towards neurodiversity, not being some HR checkbox of saying we now do this well enough, where it's not just a moral or a legal requirement. It's something, as I mentioned a little bit before, that simply works better. It's a little bit like, say, I've been meditating for many years and I love meditating. It makes me work better. It de-stresses. It makes me focus more. Where once upon a time, meditation was considered a little bit of a fluffy, maybe Eastern philosophy sort of things, where nowadays, because of a lot of the Oxford and Cambridge studies and amongst others with MRI scans, we know it works. It physiologically changes your brain in many ways for the better. It reorganizes gray matter in your brain, where now many banks and hedge funds and massive conglomerates have meditation rooms. My hope for neurodiversity is similar to the banks that get meditation rooms because it works. We're going to get neurodiversity to be a position which is something we were striving for because it makes people work better, because it makes people happier, not because it's the politically correct thing to do. And that's what I hope for the future and what I'm starting to see a little bit. And that's what we want to promote as well, using the data that we gather over the next 3, 4, 5 years to show, it's not just something that's nice and good. It works. It makes things better. And it's also nice and good.
Nemo, that is a brilliant place to finish. I think I really agree. That's going to be a fantastic place to be. And I think organizations are starting to make the shift and starting to reorganize their environments, their built environments, to make it a better place for all. And it's about time. And I'm excited by what the future has to bring. And thank you so much for being on the podcast with me. And I really look forward to following your journey and what you achieve.
Thank you very much, Theo. It's a pleasure having
you. You've been listening to Neurodiversity at Work, available on all good podcast hosts. Please do sign up now, like, share, and comment. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you.